You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. This is a tough show today because of the last portion of the show where we honor the lives of those men and women who have given their lives in the line of duty. It's called End of Watch, and there are so many names that I had to read this week. Please listen to them, honor them, and understand the sacrifice that the men and women of law enforcement are making each and every day. Before we take a walk into the interview room where we have a great guest, let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. Well, the madness continues in California. It seems like every show I talk about some madness that's taking place in that state. And once again, the subject of this story is Governor Moonbeam, Jerry Brown. I guess as he enters the last 4 months of his term of office, he is determined to do as much damage as he possibly can to the honest citizens who are the potential victims of all the criminals that he is advocating for. This guy is out of control. What he's done now just boggles my mind. He has now commuted the sentences for 20 murderers serving life without parole. Yeah, you heard me correctly. 20 murderers who have been adjudicated as guilty and sentenced to serving life without parole because of their incredible violence are now having their sentences commuted. Now, what that means is they're now eligible to get paroled. And in the weird state of California, that means that you're going to be unleashing more and more of these violent criminals upon an unsuspecting public. Now, if this were the only commutations he's made, it would still be egregious, but it's not. He's given nearly two dozen convicted killers the opportunity for parole, and he's already commuted the life sentences of another 62. Yes, he's commuted the life sentences of another 62 since 2011. And in addition to that staggering number of commutations, he's also doled out over 1,100 pardons to criminals convicted of everything from forgery to drunk driving to drug sales offenses to murder. It's unbelievable. The Crime Survivors Resource Center founder, Patricia Wenkinis, told the Washington Post, 2018 is the worst I've ever seen it. The sad reality is California is not a victim-friendly state. It is an offender-friendly state. I mean, I don't think it gets much clearer than that statement right there. And how does he justify, how does this guy who lives in a world of opulence and financial security, how does he justify this insanity? And it's incredible. He actually believes that he's doing the right thing. You know, he believes that people deserve a second chance. And you know what? I agree. There are people that deserve a second chance. But is it the murderers? Is that who? I don't know. I think he's got his priorities set in a very weird way. And I think it is his, as the Deputy District Attorneys Association said, that this latest commutations were motivated by Governor Brown's personal philosophy of de-incarceration. And so once again, the madness continues in California. And while we're talking about California, in Sacramento, another police officer was killed. Now, they've lost three in the last few years. This officer was shot to death. Another police officer was shot at the same incident with an individual who they had just rolled up on after a routine call, and the guy opened fire on them, killing this officer Stasniak, Sacramento County deputy. Well, the sheriff of Sacramento County was incensed at the fact that the following day there was a anti-law enforcement protest to take place in Sacramento, protesting the excessive force and law enforcement. Well, he did something that I'm glad he did. I'm shocked that he did it because of the political correctness gone insane in California. But he was emotional about the loss of yet another deputy, and he called for counter protests. Yes, a sheriff that had the guts to stand up against the political correctness insanity that's infecting law enforcement officers all over this country. And he asked for, he says, we have a planned protest tomorrow at a statewide law enforcement conference down in Sacramento. It's called Cops West, by the way. I know that people have this overwhelming urge to do what they can and not knowing what to do. One of the things you can do is go down there. Go down to the convention center tomorrow and show your support for law enforcement while they continue to protest law enforcement. I applaud the sheriff for that. But it had the expected reaction. Black Lives Matter came out with a tremendously critical diatribe against the sheriff, basically calling him, you know, a fascist and that he was destroying free speech. Like the speech of others doesn't mean anything. Black Lives Matter, who all they advocate for is violence and unrest, they don't want to hear an opposing viewpoint. And the sheriff, I hope that people do heed his request and go down there and counter protest at the protest. That will be some very interesting stuff. And I'm happy to see that every now and then some law enforcement leaders are standing up. Now, also in California, another story that's very interesting. Excuse me, I'm wrong. Is Chicago. The Fraternal Order of Police, who represent more law enforcement officers than any other police union organization in the country, 325 or so thousand, they have threatened to sue the family who claim cops killed their teen relative, but who in actuality shot himself. Now, this is stunning because for a police union to take this kind of action is really groundbreaking. Now this is a particularly egregious case that this attorney for the family of a kid named Steven Rosenthal, and the attorney is some guy named Andrew Stroth. Now, he has come out. Here's what happened. The incident happened when police officers were chasing this young man. I think he was 14 or 15. And they saw him with a gun. And as they chased him, he ran up to his grandmother's porch and killed himself, shot himself in the head. Well, all the police officers were wearing body cameras. There was no weapons fired by the police. The Cook County coroner ruled that it was a suicide. And yet, despite all of that, you have this attorney and his family claiming that the police murdered this young man, causing protests, causing a situation where the officers are being threatened. And here's what they said. Here's what this moronic lying sack of dung attorney said. Stephen was on the stairwell of his grandmother's house on the west side of Chicago when police officers stormed up the stairwell, chasing. Stroth told reporters in a public news conference that preceded the protest. Within moments, these officers, without cause or provocation, shot and killed 15-year-old Stephen. Based on several eyewitness accounts, these officers ended the hopes and dreams of a talented young man with a bright future. Well, that's a bunch of bull. Fact of the matter is, this kid was already a thug and a criminal. He was caught with a gun, and he took his own life, his decision, and yet this lawyer is attempting to clearly get a payday and doesn't care about the lies that he tells. So I am happy to see that the FOP, Fraternal Order of Police, has now threatened him that if he does not cease and desist, they will sue him. And they've got a great libel case, no doubt about it. So this is an important thing to watch. I have a feeling that this guy will once he realizes that they mean business, he'll probably fold up his pandering tent and go home, because the fact of the matter is he's a lying dog. Extort money from the city where these officers did absolutely nothing wrong is nothing short of despicable. Well, that's about all the time we have for this portion of the program, and we're going to then take a walk into the interview room where you're going to hear from a great guest. If you're a police officer, or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot, especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, and that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it, and this is really good stuff. You don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And it's only available at StinkyVest.com. Go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com. See their products, and it is worthwhile. To my active duty law enforcement listeners, if you are looking for extra work, that is the same type of work that you're doing, working traffic assignments, security assignments through your department, there is a company you need to know about, Law Enforcement Specialists. Law Enforcement Specialists is in most states in this country, and they get you extra work. They work with your agency to do it. It's all covered by your department's policies, and they are basically your place to go to work extra duty assignments. I know that it's sometimes difficult to get those assignments due to the scheduling difficulties and all, but check with them. Law Enforcement Specialists, go to offdutypoliceofficers.com, offdutypoliceofficers.com, or give them a call, 623-223-9553, and they are called Law Enforcement Specialists. They will get you some work assignments, because let's face it, we all need to take a vacation now and then. You got to pay for it. Give them a call, offdutypoliceofficers.com, at 623-223-9553.
Well, the Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutLoud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is Steve Blackwell. Steve is the National Outreach Coordinator for Homes for Heroes, a very, very interesting company and also organization that does some amazing things for law enforcement officers, military, firefighters, and those who serve the public. Steve, thanks so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Well, thank you, Randy, for having me here. No problem.
So, first of all, tell us about Homes for Heroes, where it came from. I'm familiar with it because after you and I spoke, I looked up the company and found out some amazing things. But give us your take on how this company came to be, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, Homes for Heroes was started right after 9/11, the tragic events of 9/11, formed by some housing professionals, real estate, mortgage finance, lending professionals who started a program in Minnesota, Minneapolis, to give back to these heroes, police, fire, EMS, for all they do for our communities there. So as that initiative grew, it grew into now what we have is a nationwide network of well over 2,000 affiliates who belong to Homes for Heroes is their way of giving back, not only to the heroes, but to the Homes for Heroes Foundation that gives out grants to heroes in need and well. So they administer our program all across the country under our programs and under our approval. And it's just been a great thing for the hero community.
Tell me about the founder of this organization.
Ruth Johnson is the founder of this organization, and she was had a brokerage firm here in Minneapolis. She sold that off. She started Homes for Heroes. She put everything she had into this. This is a family organization that now has changed into a social enterprise because, you know, the enterprise called Homes for Heroes, which is our network of affiliates that belong to us, is what fully funds and supports the Homes for Heroes Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit that every month we're giving away grants to these heroes in need. And unfortunately, Randy, as you can see across the country, there's a lot of that going on.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's for sure. So regarding the foundation, what is the criteria for how do you guys help these first responders?
We can help in a lot of ways. We typically what it is some type of tragic or dire need for these first responders. And unfortunately, like I said, right now, firefighters, police officers, we're losing a lot of these heroes in the line of duty. So that right now is kind of our focus. We also help a lot of veterans organizations. May was our military month here, and we gave out $50,000 in grants to the National Homeless Veterans Coalition, which is a consortium of veteran service organizations across the country. They'll use that money for homeless veterans initiatives, keeping those veterans in their homes. So we help in a lot of different ways, but right now our focus is on our law enforcement and our public safety heroes that we're unfortunately losing quite a bit here.
So if a law enforcement officer needs help and in say they've been disabled in the line of duty and yep. they need wheelchair access or something like that, is that something that you guys would get involved in?
Well, yeah, and we get involved in it on two different levels. So nationally, that would be something that we have a grant nomination process through our local affiliate in that area, who would nominate them to our foundation for a grant. And our local affiliates are also embedded in the service community around them as well, and they can bring in resources as well to help that hero at the local level as well.
That's amazing. How many people do you think your organization has given aid to over the years?
Oh Lord, we've probably well over $35 million in grants and savings for heroes. A big part of what we do is our home benefit program, and that allows these heroes, and it's not available to the general public, but allows these heroes, police, fire, military, corrections, public safety. And we also have services for healthcare and teachers as well. But that home benefit program allows them to buy a home in the community they want to live in, which is a big challenge for a lot of our heroes. And it saves them significant savings on their closing costs. We also give them money back from Homes for Heroes at closing to buy furniture, appliances, and just offset moving costs.
That's pretty amazing stuff. Now, you know, I'm somewhat familiar with your personal story. You were a police officer as well.
Correct. I was 30 years in law enforcement, and many of our people at Homes for Heroes at our headquarters here in Minneapolis, they are either, you know, part of the hero world or married spouses and family of heroes themselves. So I was 30 years with Minneapolis, a majority out with the City of Minneapolis Police Department. I finished my career as a chief deputy in a sheriff's office north of the metro area in Minneapolis, came back to the city, and then I retired and came here to Homes for Heroes. So there's life after retirement, man.
Well, you know, in addition to your law enforcement career, you also served in the military?
Yeah, I'm a military member. I did 17 years in the active and National Guard. I've deployed across the country in different statewide and national initiatives. Been to Bosnia, been to Iraq for 2 years, a two-year tour in Iraq. Unfortunately, wounded there, which cut my military service a little short. So 17 years was all I could do. But I mean, tell you, it's been an honor and a privilege to be able to do all those things for my community and my nation.
Well, one of the things that I found interesting is that your wife also served with you in the military.
Yeah, she's still in. She's a first sergeant in the Minnesota National Guard. But we deployed as part of the same unit to Iraq, also to Bosnia, but we deployed to Iraq. We ran combat missions, over 180 combat missions, as parts of separate teams. She was on a different escort team than I was. But there were certainly moments when I could actually see her unit and her team getting ambushed or an IED attack. And I would come in support of that. My team was right behind them on another mission, or they were going north as we were going south. And it was quite an experience for us. And I know a lot of people say, well, you know, you're lucky you had your wife overseas with you. And believe me, Randy, I would have rather have her at home safe
I'm sure.
Not have to think about her going through those things while I was going through them myself.
I'm sure. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine. And she was also in law enforcement, from what I understand?
Yeah, she's a lieutenant with the Minneapolis Police Department. She just finished her homicide assignment, and she's now in charge of their leadership and professional development programs for the agency.
You know, it's an amazing career path, and one that led you to this organization, Homes for Heroes, and doing
yep.
such great work. The organization itself, how do you obtain the people that are looking for assistance?
They can go right to our website. A lot of it is done at the local level. We don't advertise on a national level through Homes for Heroes. And the reason we don't do that is because it's just a hard choice to be able to, you know, we either spend that money on advertising or we spend that money and put it into the foundation and we give that money back. So this is a circle of giving program. That's the mission we have. So we allow our local affiliates all over, we're in every state, every metro area across the country. They do a lot of our word of mouth. They do a lot of our program stuff. And they're the ones who seek out these heroes, let them know about the program. And certainly if your heroes are listening out there, let people know, let the word of mouth go out there and spread the word about it. It's a great program. I've used it several times. It saves you a ton of money on buying a home in that community there.
Is that how you originally came in contact with this company?
Yeah, we heard about the program, and we were back in 2003, right after 9/11. We were one of the first heroes to go through it, me and my wife, and I just, back then I knew this was something special. And when I started looking at retirement, I contacted Ruth, the owner, and the CEO of this corporation and this foundation. I said, look, I want to be a part of this. I want to get this out to as many heroes as we can. And she brought me on board, and it's been great ever since.
Wow. How long have you been with Homes for Heroes?
I'm going on about 4 years now. Right after I retired, I walked out of that, walked into this, and it's been great. It fills my cup every day of giving back. It allows me to stay in contact with these heroes across the country. Unfortunately, I get to go and connect with these hero families who have lost heroes and be able to do something to help them out, give them that grant, and try and help them and connect other resources to them as well.
Give me an example of one of the stories that that really touched you and that your capabilities as the outreach coordinator. Tell me about one of those or two of those stories.
Well, one that stands out to me was last spring when Colorado Springs lost an officer up there. And the Homes for Heroes affiliates in there, they wanted to do something special for that. We all got together. I flew out there, spent some time with them. We put on a huge fundraising event in the city of Colorado Springs, brought in 300-400 people, attended that event. We had vendors. We had all kinds of 5K run, hero run. We had canine demonstrations, and we raised about $25,000 for the El Paso County Sheriff's Foundation, their canine programs, Colorado Springs canine programs. We had a grant of $5,000 for the family of that officer that was killed in the line of duty up there. But the biggest thing about that was to watch the community come out to that event. And when you look at all the stuff going on around the country and the negativity about the police from some members of the community, that was not the way it was here. This was a great example of that community coming out, using our platform to really show how they support those officers and their first responders in that community. And, you know, they opened up their hearts and put their money where their heart was and helped out those organizations and that officer's family with us.
What a fantastic story that is. You know, the fallen are one thing that I think law enforcement does well is honor our fallen. We do that pretty well. But what are the other circumstances that that you help out in?
We've helped, and as you see, we cover several hero groups here. So it's corrections, it's fire, it's EMS. We do a lot of recognition at the grassroots level for these heroes that are retiring or they're doing something special in their community. Our affiliates are all over that. They're very community-oriented. They're very community-based. They love what they do for Homes for Heroes, and they only do it for the heroes. It's not something they do for the general public. This is what they do under our banner and our mission. So they're very active with that at the local level, whatever, you know, that ramp for the house, that veteran's garbage house, or a hero's house burns down, and you know, we got people there on the national level. We can get them a grant and also have people come in at the local level and help them out as well. So that's probably the best thing about our organization is that we have a lot of presence and a big footprint locally in many communities, and we also have a nice presence nationally. So we can help that hero at both ends.
One of the things that I find so interesting about the endeavor that you're involved in is it takes a business on one side and then marries it to a charitable organization on the other side,
right.
And they both
right.
work seamlessly together to assist. And I think that's a brilliant model. Let's go over to the side where that's the business side, where it's a real estate business. Tell me about what the organization does to assist as far as obtaining a home, as buying or selling.
Yeah, it's like I said, our affiliates are all professionals in that housing industry area. They mortgage professionals, real estate professionals. So they've got to fit an approval process to even become part of our program and to fly our flag. So we interview them. We get prospective agents or mortgage and lenders on, and make sure they fit our mission. This is not a profiteering business. This is not about leads. This is not about anything other than supporting these local heroes in your local community. And you need to have that heart set and that mindset to even be able to work under our program there. So that's the first step of it. There is picking those people that do it for the right reasons. Now, if a hero needs, if they're going to buy a home or sell a home, I as another hero, I'll tell you, this is the program to use. They go on their website, hometoheroes.com, fill out the information. There's no obligation there, but we need to verify they are a hero because, like I said, this is not available to the general public. Only eligible heroes get this. And then we match them to that local affiliate in that area who then helps them get that home. The closing costs are reduced significantly, and also we're going to get them a check cut out, depending on the value of that home that they buy or sell. We're going to cut them a check from Homes for Heroes, just as our way of saying thank you, for seven. It's like $700 for every $100,000 value of that home. So if it's a $300,000 home, they're going to get a check for us for $2,100. They can go buy furniture, appliances, a lawnmower, outfit their baby's room, whatever they need to do with that money. It's our gift to them. It's part of that program.
That's amazing. When you began this program, what's the founder's name again?
Ruth Johnson.
Ruth Johnson. Is she still active with the organization?
Oh yeah, she's here every day, and very big part of the program. We're very active in it, and it is all about the heroes. It is all about the heroes with Ruth.
So if I'm a potential buyer. I hear mm-hmm. about Homes for Heroes. The best way to connect is through the website.
Yes, because then we're going to match you up with your local representative in that area. All right, so we need to know where you're looking and where you're going to buy and where you live. And like I said, it is just our way of matching that up. There's no obligation with any of that information. Once again, make sure you're a hero. You're eligible for the program.
What is the requirements for that?
The eligible heroes are public safety, police, fire, EMS, corrections, military veterans, and we also serve healthcare, nursing professionals, and teachers as well. We think that they are a big part of that community as well and making it a better place to live. So they are also eligible for our program.
Okay. So, and you're are you everywhere in the United States?
We are in every state, yep, everywhere. Yep, we're national.
If I live in a small town in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. And yep. I contact you guys, you would have an affiliate somewhere in the area that could fulfill my needs.
Exactly, yep. That we'll take that zip code that you're in, and we'll match that to our affiliate in that area. Our affiliates have area responsibilities and regional area responsibilities in these in all the states, and then we match that to the area responsibility, and then they reach out within 24 hours. They'll be contacting that hero saying, hey, I'm your local affiliate with Homes for Heroes. Let's go. What do you need? We can help you out here.
Do you also do anything as far as emergency aid? When I say that, you know, sometimes these needs for these, you know, for these heroes come up very quickly. What is the time frame involved with asking for help and then receiving it?
Yeah, that once again, that's kind of the beauty of how we're structured at the national and grassroots level, is that if it's an immediate need, we're going to reach out to those affiliates in that area because they have connections in that local community that can help out right away while we're getting the ball rolling on the grant and so forth and as well. So it starts at the local level for the immediate needs, and then the long-term need, we're going to come down with that grant as well from the foundation.
I understand. So you have it streamlined purposefully for these emergency type situations.
Right. We have the, that's why we have that network at the local level. We're always talking with them about ways to help, and they're seeking out ways to help in the local community. You know, Homes for Heroes is a social enterprise. That's how it's structured. So the enterprise called Homes for Heroes, that's our business between our affiliates in our company, Homes for Heroes, that is what funds and supports the foundation, the nonprofit arm of this organization. So it'd be very difficult, you know, in today's world, if we just had a freestanding foundation and just relied on solicitations to fund that foundation. While we have connected our foundation and our programs to the housing industry, which is never going to go away, Randy. It's always going to be there. And there's always going to be revenues generated from that housing industry, not from our heroes, but from our affiliates to us that fund that foundation. So it's healthy, it's robust, it is a dependable funding stream for that. And that was the mission from the start.
Well, as a charitable organization on that side of the house, do you also take donations from others?
Yes, we do. Yep, we take donations. And it's not that we don't, we take donations, and I don't want to send a message we don't, but the way we're structured always ensures there's going to be some funding there for that foundation to do the things it needs to do. But yes, we do take donations, and we have organizations that will have fundraisers for our foundation. Absolutely. It's a great cause. And like I said, the more that foundation grows, the more we're going to help heroes. We zero out that foundation every year. We're always giving that money out. We don't hang on to any of it. We don't carry it over from year to year. You know, that money is a constant flow that goes into that foundation, so we can keep a steady stream of grants going out to these heroes across the country.
It's a brilliant model. It's absolutely fantastic. I'm so impressed with both the organizational levels that you're talking about and also the effectiveness. How many people are actually involved in the charitable organization?
Oh Lord, we've got over 2,300 affiliates nationwide, and they're all the eyes and ears of our foundation. That's the beauty of it, is not only do they deliver our programs, but they're also the eyes and ears of our foundation. So they're the ones who see the need in the local community, send that need up to nominate them up to our foundation, and if there's an immediate need, they will handle that at the grassroots level while we work out that grant from the foundation. So it tends to cover the bases very well.
So I think I just got a better level of understanding here. So the realtors that are all part of your network, they are also part of your charitable organization.
Exactly. They are the eyes and ears of our foundation. They're the ones who initiate that grant stuff. They're the ones who get a hold of that hero family and work in that local community because they know the local community. We don't, at a national level, there's kind of a disconnect, and we want that grassroots presence right there with that local hero community, and that affiliate does it. So that's why when I say we screen our affiliates, whoever we bring on, they have to be approved because they need to understand their role in this organization and how impactful they can be. They can't drop the ball. They got to be able to do what we need them to do, and they love to do it. I mean, that's why they become part of us. It is their way of giving back in their local community.
I would venture to guess that that you have a lot of either former or retired heroes themselves who have yep. who have gotten into the real estate market as far as becoming sellers or brokers, and then they join up with you as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we have some that were, you know, injured themselves in the line of duty. They turned to real estate or lending and mortgage as their way of, you know, making a living now, and they join our program. And I'll throw this out there to all your listeners that we are growing. All right. This social enterprise and the circle of giving program we have is growing, and we want to add more. So, and we want to keep it heroes helping heroes. So, if any of your listeners know they have a spouse or a friend or a hero that also does real estate in their local area or lending or mortgage finance, let us know. Let them know to go to our website as well, and there's a place for them to go and become part of that affiliate network as well.
That's really interesting. That's great information to have out there. We all know that when a police officer gets injured or disabled in the line of duty, there are, you know, many times when they can no longer serve, and and to be able to be part of something that is giving back is of course very healthy, not just physically but psychologically as well. One other question along those lines. There's a, you know, of course, a difference between being a licensed real estate broker and being a licensed salesperson. You know, to get that broker's license is a much higher level there.
Yep.
So, do you have to be a broker, or can you be a real estate salesperson and have an opportunity to work with Homes for Heroes as well?
Yeah, we all three. So we a broker, or we have broker larger offices. The whole brokerage is part of our program, or they'll have individual agents be part of our program, and we have individual agents going to do it. So yeah, all of them are eligible to be part of our network, and all of them carry the same responsibility for being those eyes and ears in that community. That doesn't change for any of those memberships with our affiliations.
Well, that's fantastic. So once again, give us the website information.
The home benefit program is homesforheroes.com. The foundation is homesforheroesfoundation.org. I would encourage any heroes out there, if you know of a hero in need, let us know through that foundation website. Even call us, and you'll chat with one of our guys, Lance. We got Lance. He does a lot of our chats with a lot of these heroes. Right now, he's leading the whole company with chats online with heroes. So we want to keep him busy. they can go online and chat with Lance, and he'll fill them in on things. He's a great guy, and then they'll probably send them over to me, and then we can talk more. We'll get them the help they need.
That's fantastic. And for my listeners, I want you to know that we are going to be affiliating with Homes for Heroes, the organization The Wounded Blue, which is going to come online here very shortly. And and we're very, very happy to become a partner with Homes for Heroes as well. So I appreciate you taking
You'll be that resource as well.
I'm really very much looking forward to working with you and your organization. And Steve, thanks so much for taking the time to come on to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, and talk about your amazing organization.
Well, thank you, Randy, and like everybody else out there, stay safe. One last thing, we got those wildfires in California, and our first responders are taking a beating out there. Please keep them in your thoughts and prayers, everyone.
Absolutely. For those of you who are involved in investigative work, there is an amazing software that you've got to take a look at from Blue Light LLC. And Blue Light is a company owned by a retired Special Forces Sergeant Major. He is a strong supporter of law enforcement. And this software is amazing. It is incredible for conspiracy investigations, narcotics investigations, homicide. It's called Analyst Notebook. And it's a product that has been used very, very successfully in bringing down a lot of bad guys. The reason the Special Forces Sergeant Major got involved in it is because he used to use it in the Middle East for discovering
IED, improvised explosive devices, originators, and their networks. But it's great for civilian police work. So check it out, Blue Light LLC's Analyst Notebook, and it is an amazing product. Check it out. Those of you who have followed me for any length of time know that in addition to being a 33-year law enforcement officer, I'm also an author. I've written 4 books, True Blue, Police Stories by Those Who Have Lived Them, A Cop's Life, True Blue to Protect and Serve, and my latest book, which was actually just released only a couple weeks ago, is The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. It's a much different book than what I've written before, but it is truly an inspirational book because I had traveled the country talking to people who have done amazing things with their lives, people like Frank Shankwitz, who, when he was an Arizona State Trooper, created the Make-A-Wish Foundation, Gary Sinise, who's done amazing things for military and law enforcement, and a number of people, some names you know, some names you don't, but this book is full of inspiration. Changed my life doing this book. Now, here's something I'm going to share with you. You know, I have a lot of Facebook followers, you know, more than 25,000 of them. But Facebook is not allowing me to share the message of my book. I think they call it shadow banning, and it's very, very disturbing. So I'm going to ask your help. First of all, I would love for you to go to Amazon.com. It's available on Kindle. It's available on audiobook, and of course in hardcover and softcover. I would love for you to pick up a copy of this book, share it with your children, because it is full of inspiration about how everyone can become a personal hero. But I'd also ask you to share this information with your friends on Facebook and other social media, because I'm fighting an uphill battle. Shadow banning is a real thing. I go to share it with my followers, and it keeps on getting unapproved, saying it's too political. There's nothing political about this book. It's about good people. I'd ask for you to share this message. I need your help to get this message out, because this book can change the world. When you talk about becoming a personal hero, you change the life of one person. You add to that person's life, and you change the world. So if you would, check me out on Amazon.com. All my books are available there. But the Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People. And I appreciate your support.
End of Watch with Randy Sutton.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have given their lives in the line of duty and made the ultimate sacrifice. The violence that has occurred against law enforcement is not even staying stable. It's increasing. And unfortunately, this week I have a number of names to read that have given their lives. The first is Police Officer Oscar Reyes of the Costa Mesa Police Department in California. Police Officer Oscar Reyes suffered a fatal heart attack after participating in the Orange County Traffic Officers Association Motor Rodeo at Huntington State Beach. He had participated in several difficult training and skills competitions during the event and collapsed. He was transported to a local hospital where he was pronounced dead. Officer Reyes had served with the Costa Mesa Police Department for 13 years. He is survived by his wife and 3 children. Police Officer Oscar Reyes, Costa Mesa Police Department, California, End of Watch, Wednesday, September 12th, 2018. Second is Corrections Officer Armando Gallegos of the California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. Corrections Officer Armando Gallegos succumbed to injuries sustained at approximately 3:30 p.m. on April 21st, 2018, when he was attacked by multiple inmates at the Kern Valley State Prison. He and another officer were attempting to search an inmate in the day room of the prison's minimum support facility. The inmate attacked Officer Gallegos and was then joined by 11 other inmates who continued to severely beat him and another officer. The inmates continued to assault him after responding officers intervened with physical force and pepper spray. All of the inmates were eventually subdued. Officer Gallegos was transported to a local hospital, suffering from a broken nose, head injuries, and fractured vertebrae. He was eventually released from the hospital to recover at home, but he suffered complications on September 14th and collapsed. He returned to the hospital where he was pronounced dead. CCDR investigators recommended attempted homicide charges on 7 of the inmates following the assault. Hopefully, they will now be charged with murder. Officer Gallegos had served the California Department of Corrections for 13 years. Corrections Officer Armando Gallegos, California Department of Corrections, end of watch Friday, September 14th, 2018. Third officer to die this week, Police Officer Garrett Hull of the Fort Worth Police Department. Garrett Hull succumbed to a gunshot wound sustained the previous night as he and other members of the Criminal Intelligence Unit attempted to apprehend 3 armed robbery suspects. The officers had been conducting surveillance of the 3 suspects, who had been involved in more than 15 armed robberies in which 3 people were shot. The suspects entered a bar in the 400 block of West Bittison Street shortly before midnight and robbed the 10 patrons at gunpoint. As they fled from the building, the officers attempted to take them into custody. All 3 suspects attempted to flee on foot into the surrounding neighborhood, and during the foot pursuit, one of the men opened fire, striking Officer Hull in the head. Other officers returned fire and killed the subject before placing Hull in a patrol car and transporting him to a hospital. The other 2 suspects were apprehended. Officer Hull succumbed to his wounds the following evening. He had served with the Fort Worth Police Department for 17 years. He is survived by his wife and 2 daughters. Police Officer Garrett Hull, Fort Worth Police Department, Texas. End of watch, Friday, September 14th, 2018. The next is Chief of Police Frank McClellan Jr. of the Ludowicki Police Department in Georgia. Chief of Police Frank McClellan was struck and killed by a vehicle being pursued by other officers shortly after 7 p.m. The pursuit had started in Liberty County and continued through Hinesville and into Long County on Highway 84 at speeds topping 100 miles per hour. Chief McClellan was attempting to stop traffic at the intersection of Highway 84 and McDonald Street when the vehicle struck him. The vehicle then left the roadway and fatally struck a motorcyclist at an adjacent gas station before coming to arrest. The fleeing subject was taken into custody at the scene. He was charged with 2 counts of murder, vehicular homicide, and DUI. Chief of Police Frank McClellan Jr., Ludowicki Police Department, Georgia. End of watch, September 15th, 2018. The next officer, Deputy Sheriff Robert K. Kunz III of the Sedgwick County Sheriff's Office in Kansas. Deputy Sheriff Robert Kunz was shot and killed while investigating a suspicious person call in a rural area near the intersection of North 295th Street and West 21st Street. He arrived at the scene and made contact with a male subject in a stolen vehicle. During the encounter, he and the subject exchanged shots, and both were fatally shot. Deputy Kunz's backup officer arrived at the scene and located the deputy suffering from a gunshot wound. Deputy Kunz had served with the Sedgwick County Sheriff's Office for 12 years and had previously served with the Shawnee County Sheriff's Office for 6 years. He is survived by his wife and child. Deputy Sheriff Robert K. Kunz III, Sedgwick County Sheriff's Office, Kansas. End of watch, Sunday, September 16th, 2018. The next officer to give his life in the line of duty is Deputy Sheriff Mark Stasiak of the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department in California. Deputy Sheriff Mark Stasiak was shot and killed at approximately 1:50 p.m. as he and another deputy responded to a disturbance call at an auto parts store on Folsom Boulevard. A male subject opened fire on them without warning as they arrived on the scene, fatally wounding Deputy Stasiak and wounding the other officer. Other responding deputies shot and wounded the suspect as he fled on foot. He was then taken into custody. Deputy Stasiak has served with the Sacramento County Sheriff's Department for 4.5 years. Deputy Sheriff Mark Stasiak, Sacramento County Sheriff's Department, California. End of Watch, September 17th, 2018. May these officers rest in peace. I want to thank you for listening once again to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Now, I want you to keep in mind that this radio broadcast, podcast that is heard and downloaded, is also on Live Talk Radio. It reaches about 200,000 people, has about 200,000 listens on Live Talk Radio, and about 100,000 downloads on podcast. A large law enforcement audience, of course, and people that support us. So if you are an advertiser and you want to reach this audience, I would ask you to contact me at randylsutton@live.com. That's randylsutton@live.com. And we can talk about advertising your business on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. Thanks again. We'll see you next week.